Welcome, everyone, and thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with CA, and we did formally change the name from the Friday Morning Show to A Course in Miracles, and I don't think that should be too tough of a switch for most of you, because as you know, we always talk about A Course in Miracles on this show in this hour on Fridays, but also because this show used to be called A Course in Miracles before we went to the Friday Morning Show. So I sure love that title, but you know what? This is more indicative of what we're actually doing. So welcome and thanks for being here with me today. And also, Happy New Year. Every time I keep saying that, I feel like Happy New Year was just months ago. And in fact, just yesterday, I was kind of looking at the calendar for something. And I said, you know, it's only the 10th of January. You know, CA, it's not like you're, I mean, I'm already somehow into March or April or whatever. And so, but that's just not true. We're just barely into 2019. So I think we're going to be off to a very good start in 2019. And especially with this show, I'm very excited. I've been thinking a lot during the break about where we're going to go and what we're going to do. And a couple of things, and one of them we will tackle today, but a couple of things that I've been thinking about is I've been listening to a recording of Ken Wapnick on something called Living A Course in Miracles. Now, he did this some time ago. In fact, I think he did it right around 2000. So it's not particularly a new recording. But I'll tell you what, even for somebody who has studied the course for quite a while, it takes you back to the basics. And for somebody who hasn't studied the course, and is sort of saying, hey, what is this all about? I think it's wonderful. And in fact, it starts off and it's so funny. You know, it's so very indicative of what I think of Ken Wapnick. I didn't used to think he was funny the first time I heard him. But then I guess I got used to his style. And so I'm listening to this session that he did. And it's funny because we're just laughing at ourselves. But I thought, you know what, this would be something perfect for us to listen to in January and maybe February. We'll see how long it takes us to get through that. We will listen to excerpts of that Living A Course in Miracles. And of course, I purchased that at the Foundation for A Course in Miracles, which is www.facim.org. And, you know, there are so many things to pick from. You know, there's just so much. But I was attracted to that title, got it, have been listening to it. And I thought, you know what, I really want to share this with you guys, too. It's wonderful stuff. So we will start doing that next week. But this week, we're doing something that's actually quite similar, and that is very synchronistic with that whole idea of what is it like to live A Course in Miracles. And that is, we are going to look at the little book that Ken wrote, which is called 2 + 2 = 5. And I've been trying to read and get through that book for several years now. I don't know why I keep reading like the first half or whatever, but I really tackled that during the break or during December. I've been reading it and loving every minute of it. So my guest today is Susan Dugan. And I said, Susan, we just got to tackle this book because we had been talking about this for some time. So she agreed. She goes, yeah, let's talk about some of the principles that are in that book, 2 + 2 = 5. However, I'll warn you, I've been wanting to talk about it on the show, but once I really started looking at it and thinking about how do you present this, how do you talk about it, you know, there's some pretty heavy stuff in it. And there are some things that I think if you're new to A Course in Miracles, you may even be going, what are they talking about? Which is why I'm glad that we're going to go back next week and listen to that whole idea of living A Course in Miracles. But I know that you'll get something good out of today's show. And if you're one of those people who does like to kind of investigate some of the things that have been written regarding the course, and specifically Ken Wapnick, who I really do consider just the preeminent teacher of A Course in Miracles, this little book, and I always call it a little book because he has a number of literally small books that are less than 100 pages. They're not even like a typical book size. They're like 5 by 6 or something like that. He wrote a number of those, and they were based, I think, actually on lectures that he did or teachings or workshops. And then he would put them into a little book, or somebody would take, you know, the workshop and literally transcribe it. Now, I'm not sure if that's how this one came about or not, but I think so. But in any case, that's what we're going to talk about. And like I said, my guest is Susan Dugan. She is a teacher of A Course in Miracles, and she's the author of multiple articles and books specifically on forgiveness. And she talks a lot about living A Course in Miracles. So that's what we're going to talk about today. And welcome, Susan. Thank you for being here.
Well, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. I know it feels like forever, doesn't it?
Yes, it really does. Yeah.
And by the way, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to, before we got started, sort of give another plug for Living A Course in Miracles. I'm glad you mentioned that because that is one of the CD sets that I always recommend, that I listen to in the, at the beginning of my journey with the Course and with Ken Wapnick, and that I would listen to over and over again, along with What It Says, which is another CD that is at the preface of the Course, but really, you know, sort of a great summary of distills all of the themes in the Course as well into a very short space. But Living A Course in Miracles is excellent for people that are new, and, you know, new to the Course can mean in the first 10 years or so, right, or 15. But it's good for all of us. It really does get at all of those basic themes of the Course, and as its title suggests, is very much about living. You know, what does it mean to live this? So it gives you that metaphysical foundation that is so unique and must be grasped intellectually and always kept in mind. But then what does this look like in our lives and trying to live this? And the topic today that you suggested, 2 + 2 = 5, I have read the book and listened to it does come from a workshop, and there's a CD set, I believe, on it. But I didn't have time to re-listen, you know, to revisit that whole thing to before this. But in just thinking about it, I you know, a whole lot of ideas that Ken talked about over the years came back to me, and so I'm looking forward to sharing some of that, and also sharing something from one of his interviews that kind of speaks to this. But maybe we better go back and introduce the 2 + 2 = 5 idea first, which I, you know. I know you've been sort of steeping yourself in, but
And of course, please add anything you want, because like I said, I have wanted, I don't know why this book has just called to me for so long, but maybe it's because it so much is the crux about living A Course in Miracles. In fact, one of the workbook lessons that Ken refers to over and over and over again in this book, I mean, he kind of dissects it, is 76, which is, I am under no laws but God's. And he says, and I think he actually says this in Living A Course in Miracles. He says, this is one of the most misunderstood lessons of all the lessons, of 365 lessons in the workbook. And it has to do with, and this is where, I mean, partially I think this, just tackling this can be so difficult. Because in A Course in Miracles, as Ken says, it's really written on two levels. It's written on a metaphysical level that is very uncompromising. You know, this is life. This is what reality is. But then it's written on a second level, which is, look, guys, I know that you don't live your life at that level. So let's talk about what this really is for you. But we can never lose sight of what the reality is. And so this little book, 2 + 2 = 5, was actually, I think, you know, inspired to Ken Wapnick by reading The Underground Man, which was written by, and I can never say this, Dostoevsky? Is that close?
Yes, it's close. Yeah.
Anyway, and I've never read The Underground Man, but, you know, I think that's kind of typical of many philosophies. You know, for thousands of years, if you think about humankind, we have said, why are we here? What is it? What is this all about? And even more importantly, there's got to be a better way. And so in The Underground Man, you know, he's railing against the system and basically saying, you know, in reality, 2 + 2 + 4, you know, the way people think life works is not how life works. And so that suggested to Ken this title. And so he uses it to explain that we do live in a universe where 2 + 2 = 4. And I think one of the takeaway messages that I got is it's so important to do what Ken says, be normal. Be normal. You know, even though you are studying the metaphysics of any philosophy, or you're studying the metaphysics of the Course that says 1 + 1 = 1, because there is nothing else. We are all one. We have simply fallen asleep and we believe we are living in a physical universe where all of these people are separate. These are all projections of our minds. Now, that's a wonderful thing to say, but like, for instance, when Susan says, okay, I have to finish right on time today, you know, that's a reality for what Susan is living, you know, or we don't not get up and brush our teeth or take our shower or do our hair or go to work, etc. You know, we believe we're physical beings living in this universe. So we've got to know the 2 + 2 + 4 = 4. You know, we can't ignore that. But we can also keep striving for what we know is what I call the better way, which is, you know, there is a way that we can feel connected to all other people. And that path, according to A Course in Miracles, is forgiveness. You know, awareness, always being aware of what's going on for us in this moment, using our lives as a curriculum and not even necessarily trying to change our lives, but looking at our lives as a curriculum and then applying the path of forgiveness to whatever we find. And, you know, Susan, that's another thing that, you know, how themes just seem to come to you. Well, over the last 2 months, the theme that just continually keeps coming to me, no matter whether I'm reading the course, whether I'm reading this little book or listening to one of the CD sets, the theme that keeps coming, which I think I knew, but now it's really hitting me over the head, is that you don't just go to embracing light and love. You have to look at the darkness.
Oh, yes.
You can't ignore, you can't deny whatever the darkness is. And like I said, no matter what I read, that comes up. You can't ignore the darkness.
Right. Well, can I interrupt?
Absolutely. So, yeah, I'm pretty much
okay. I want to talk to you. Well, absolutely. And I'm going to just back up a little bit on the 2 + 2 = 4 versus 5 idea. And Ken, I think, was using that, you know, that taking that idea from the literary world and adapting it as he does so often. He was so well read and versed in humanities and the, you know, Western culture and civilization writings. And so, but he's taking that idea as a way of explaining that, you know, the world's idea of 2 + 2 = 4, we've created a world outside ourselves. You know, we've projected a world outside ourselves to hide in, away from God, you know, believing that we needed to run away from God because we really separated from that level one, you know, the undifferentiated union that we still really are. Which we're in 1 + 1 = 1 because that's all there is. So we created this world of duality. It's an insane world based on an insane idea, the insane idea that we could separate from God. I mean, it never really happened, but we took that crazy idea seriously and believed it and made up a whole universe of consequences as a result. And then, you know, forgot we made it up. So within that, the insane world that we've created, we have all these laws and all these rules, and they make sense within that context of the world. They add up within the context, but they're still insane. So it's very logical. You know, the world is very logical in its insanity, but it's still insane. And so, you know, and so we're learning, you know, we still believe we asked for another, a better way. You know, felt off about this. If we're course students or on a spiritual journey, something at some point feels off about what we're doing. We never feel really loved and loving. And so we begin to question it. And at some point we say, you know, something's really wrong. And if we are following the course's way, spiritual path home, and it's not the only one, but the course's way is a path of forgiveness, comes to us in the context of our relationships, in which we're asked within the world, which we're always in relationship with something because we created this dualistic idea, this dualistic, labyrinth that just seems more and more complicated, where we have to interact all the time and it's always about one or the other. So it's using the very defense that we made up. It's teaching us to use it, as you said, as a curriculum, as a classroom, to give it a different purpose. And that's, so the course's way is leading us back, you know, is this sort of other way of 2 + 2 = 5, of recognizing within every moment that I'm wrong, you know, that it doesn't really add up. I'm wrong about this reaction that I'm having to this person, this anger that I'm feeling, this, you know, these unkind thoughts that I'm having, the fear, the anxiety, the depression that always seems to be as a result of something external for me, in some, you know, as a result of somebody else that I want to blame on someone else, is really an inside job. It's really, you know, a choice that I'm making because I'm so fearful of a punishing God that I also made up. and I'm trying to blame constantly that guilt that I feel within on someone else so that I can feel a little better about myself. You know, so it's that questioning. Forgiveness is that questioning as we go through our lives and our relationships of maybe I'm wrong about you, you know, to stop in each moment and say, you know, this is not as it appears. And so that's our path as we, you know, as course students, which is too, it doesn't add up in the world. The world says, no, the reason that you're upset is because of what this person did to you, or what's happening on the news, or what's the email you just got, or what, or the, you know, test result you just got from a doctor, or whatever the you know, the problem seems to be. But we're taking a different way, and we're beginning, you know, to question and make the purpose of our lives completely different, even as we go through and try to be normal, as you were saying, you know, to be normal. And as we go about, we're not drawing attention to what we're doing. This is an internal process in which we work with our own mind and recognize our own mind in need of healing in every problem, in every relationship. And we do that gradually because it's difficult for us. We're changing our entire way we relate to the world and the entire thought system of the way we, you know, that we've bought into too, of the world. And so we have to kind of do it gradually with help from a new part of our mind that the Course introduces us to, which it represents as Jesus, Holy Spirit, which is really just that light, that memory of wholeness in our mind that knows that we're wrong about this, and that love survived. Love survived for all of us. It's not as it appears. There's really not anyone guilty here. And that's how we learn our own innocence. But, you know, it's a tricky process because we're within a world where everything seems to add up, and the entire purpose and point and thrust of the world and direction of the world is always to root us more deeply in this dream of duality of one or the other. And it's very seductive, and we're not aware we're choosing it. Mm-hmm. So it's work in that sense. It's the making this gradually shifting the purpose of our whole lives, while still being faithful, as you were saying, to the normal things that we have to do in our lives. You know, I have a showing in my house that I have that's coming, and we have, you know, things we have to take care of, roles and responsibilities in our families, in our work, in our, you know, we can't just, the reason that I'm under no laws but God's has been so misunderstood by course students, the way in which it's been misunderstood, is to say, well, I don't have to live by the laws of the world. Well, that's nonsense. As long as we believe that we're here, it would be very unkind for us to just abandon our responsibilities to others, you know, and it wouldn't work because we're not, you know, we haven't undone the guilt that keeps the world going in our mind. And so we do have to interact with the world. But the whole point is to change the purpose of our interaction in the world. And in so doing, we're demonstrating to other minds that there's another way, you know, they too can make our decision-making mind that can choose again to learn that they are not the home of evil, darkness, and sin, that truly we are loved and loving and supported and enough. And, you know, that's what every tortured decision-making mind, every seeming person here is really trying to learn and just doesn't know it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, one thing you said that kind of stuck out to me is when you said, well, within the world, 2 + 2 = 4, and it's logical and it works. But you know what? It doesn't work.
No, it ultimately
and that's
can.
That, I think, is the problem, is that if you think about it in a very simplistic way, that we literally, as spiritual beings, ran away from home and said, hey, I'm going to create my own clubhouse. I'm going to create my own playhouse, and I'm going to create this whole world. And, you know, I'm going to base it on what I know, but I'm going to build this myself. Well, the whole thing is cracked. And we keep thinking that we can make up these alternate rules, 2 + 2 = 4. But every time we find, I think that's what happens to us spiritually, is that all of a sudden we see the cracks. No matter what we do, it doesn't bring peace. Or no matter what we do, it doesn't bring the satisfaction that we're looking for. And that, I think, is what keeps us striving as spiritual beings, because whether we will consciously recognize it or not, the whole system we created doesn't work, and it's cracked.
You know? We're seeking and seeking and never finding. And what we're, of course, what we're really seeking for is innocence, which we think we gave away forever. You know, we believe that we are so guilty that we really did separate from God, and God knows about it and is furious, and we can never kind of get rid of that guilt, right? And as much as we try to portray the people in our lives and the characters in our lives, in our dream, as the bad guys, you know, it feels very good maybe in the moment when we're angry and we can, you know, we feel very righteous in our anger. But how long does that last? I mean, the guilt never goes away. We have to keep doing it. Then we immediately feel guilty again for having exploded at somebody, right?
Right.
And so it's like, it's just a constant trying to make something work that doesn't. Or the other thing that we're doing is, as you're saying, with satisfaction, is we're trying to get to get love from the world, to fill an approval from the world that we think we lost from God. And we try to get that through other bodies that don't exist. I mean, ultimately don't exist, and, you know, are also struggling to do the same thing. And so we can't fill ourselves, you know, we can never fill ourselves up. We're constantly sacrificing for each other and then, you know, saying, look what I did for you. You have to give me this. And then the person never follows through on their end exactly the way we want them to. And nothing ever really adds up. And even when we get those things that we think will make us happy, they don't ultimately.
Right.
And
right.
So, you know, and it leaves us feeling more and more empty at some point. And while this is all happening, what happens to our bodies? They begin to self-destruct, you know, they begin to age and, you know, they have a expiration date. And so constantly struggling with trying to make ourselves happy and believe that there's some sort of reward for this when we don't really believe it. You know, we really believe that we deserve punishment. And that's what the death that we made up of mortality is all about, of the body. And so, you know, we do have this other way. And for me, the Course really brought me hope for the first time. I mean, I had tried many, many spiritual paths, and they were all helpful to some degree. But it was sort of that same thing of seeking and not finding, of saying, well, you know, this sort of works, this little bit of this works, and this little bit of this works, but that's not quite it. That's not quite it. And when I finally came to the Course and, you know, was ready for the Course, I at least recognized that that's it, you know, because it was addressing that sense of feeling unloved and unloving within me, and the sense that there's something rotten in our relationships, you know, and the rotten one is me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's in my mind, and there's something wrong about the way I'm interacting. And you know, I mean, it is a journey. That's the beginning, is to say there has to be a better way. And fortunately, we're not left alone. We have this, you know, we're introduced again to this very, very loving and supportive, non-judgmental presence in our mind that becomes our teacher, that we grow more and more intimate with and familiar with, and we develop trust in as we're, you know, beginning to practice this and make this again gradually over time, we begin to see that we really want to make this the most important thing, even as we go through doing the normal things that we do in the world. But it's tricky because the ego loves to get involved in this, right? And mm-hmm. loves, you know, when Ken says be normal, the ego's like, great, you know, I don't really have to to do this forgiveness thing so much, right? Normal people attack each other. And right. so, you know, it's so easy to slip back into indulging ourselves with this. But I wanted to, is it okay if I share something of Ken's that actually...
Of course.
Thinking about this morning, I just had a little light bulb that brought me back to an interview that I had done with him like 5 years ago. It was the last one that I did with him before he died. And so I think it was in 2013 or the end of 2012. But it's from an interview on my website, and it's called Making It the Most Important Thing. And and I have a series up on my website, toriesandforgiveness.com, that are called A Conversation with Ken Wapnick, and then have different themes. They're kind of... you know, different interviews that I conducted with him over the years about living A Course in Miracles. What does this look like in our lives? And I asked him specifically about visiting Temecula, the foundation, when it was in Temecula, California. And I was there at that time, he was still doing the 5-day academy classes. And so you're there for a week and it's pretty intense. You're really immersing yourself in the truth and listening to it all day. And it can be a wonderful experience. It's also very confrontational to the ego. But so while I was there, I was interviewing him about this. And I said, I'll read you just a little bit of this, if that's okay. Mm-hmm. So I said to him... you know, it was about being normal. And I said, but normal people don't usually spend a couple $1,000s to fly across the country and sit in a room 5 hours a day for a week to be told they don't really exist. and you know, I was explaining that this is not really, the course is a separate part of my life in some ways, even though I apply it throughout my life. I try to, and that's my goal. That's my classroom. But I mean that it's separate in the sense that the majority of my friends, none of my family, my husband, my daughter, you know, are interested in it or practice it or want to know about it. So it's a completely different, you know, separate part of my life. And so I'm telling him that it's not normal to anyone around me, and that sometimes it feels like the elephant in the room, that I've gone off the deep end to right. them. I mean, I can't talk about it. And that this has completely become my major priority and over time the work of my life. And yet, you know, I can't really, it's invisible. I have to kind of keep it in a very covert way. And so his response is, taking you as an example, you're a normal person, a wife, mother, daughter, friend. You're good at what you do, but you have a secret life. So you're not normal in that sense, but you don't act in a way that separates you from other people. That's what I mean when I tell people to be normal. You know, I'm always making fun of course students because so many of them can't have a normal conversation. You can't have a normal conversation with them. You can't use the word special in front of them, for example. And so when I say be normal, I mean look like everybody else, but that doesn't mean you don't have a secret life and that your involvement with the course in the eyes of the world would be very strange. And then he goes on to say that he was very normal in many ways in graduate school. We had small classes. We were very close. People would ask me about my secret life, and I shared as much as I could. But it was obvious there was something different. I wasn't walking around with psychology books, but reading great novels instead. I would cut classes to go to concerts and operas, but otherwise I was normal because he was very, you know, Beethoven was part of his awakening to the truth, you know, the fact that we're all the same. So he goes on to say, so you have a secret life, but you don't use it as a way of separating from people. You're being faithful to your secret life, the true love of your life, but at the same time, you're being faithful to all your various roles and responsibilities. And so you look at the desire to use the course as a way to justify separating from other people, and you choose against it. So, you know, I mean, I think that that's, you know, that's wonderful from Ken. I mean, it's really that we have a foot in both worlds as course students. And the most important thing is something that is not about the world at all.
Right.
You know, that's our path. And so this course is always about purpose. What is my purpose in every moment? And my purpose in every moment is to keep forgiveness at the forefront of my mind, but to always recognize that it's my mind in need of healing, and that means that I will always be kind to others. I'm not going to be correcting people. I'm not going to be trying to shove this down anybody's throat. I'm not going to be if I'm feeling that I am somehow, invisible or not honored or respected by others in my life because they don't ask me about A Course in Miracles, then I know that it's my mind in need of healing, right?
Right.
What I'm really doing by living A Course in Miracles is learning my own innocence, discovering my own innocence, and demonstrating to others around me by the way that love then flows through me when I've shifted to my right mind, that no matter what they do, it's not going to take my love away.
Mm-hmm.
I'm learning in that process that no matter what I do, it doesn't take God's love away from me or anyone.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the other phrase, I love how synchronicity works, even in this world. The other phrase that has come to me a couple of times over the last month is, and probably it's always been in something I've been listening to of Ken's, because of course he had his, you know, catchphrases or the things that he loved to say. But he said, the course was only meant for one person, you.
Right.
And, you know, we forget that. Or, you know, another version of that in the 2+2 book, he was saying, it doesn't matter. Like, for instance, if you're sick, go to the doctor, don't go to the doctor. He goes, but the important thing is, are you going to the doctor in your mind?
Right.
That's what's important. It's, you know, your behavior in the world, you can choose, I'm going to go to the doctor, I'm not going to go to the doctor to treat this particular sickness. But the real issue from a course perspective is, are you going to the doctor in your mind? Because that's where you're affecting the change. But also just that idea, the course was only meant for one person.
Right.
And, and I very much, I mean, in fact, I don't know that you and I have talked about this, but I often think about this show on Fridays, because as a radio host, there is a part of me that says, yeah, you know, what does the audience want? And how do I build an audience? And then the other part of me says, there's almost no doubt in my mind. I do this show for me.
Right.
And I do it, I guess, because I'm convinced that A Course in Miracles really is my spiritual path. And doing this show every Friday, it just keeps it like front and center for me. And I really do hope that there are other people on this particular path. But I really have come to recognize I do this for me. It's a very selfish thing. I do it for me.
Well, but really attending to our mind is the greatest gift we can give it all minds, because we're one mind. So there is no one listening.
Right. There is nobody listening.
Right. I mean, it's so, you know, it's only the ego that wants to, in some way try to, again, you know, to make the spiritual path into something that is much more ambitious in some way. Right. So, or to get approval for it, you know, like as I was suggesting in my relationships. So, you know, I mean, I think Ken, in one of the YouTubes that I was listening to on this subject too, which he has a couple that are very good and short. But he said, you know, we hear and follow a different drummer,
right.
Trying to learn that no one loses and everyone wins through this process, you know, and that we're really not, it's really not about one or the other. We're all on the same side. We are the same. We have the same decision-making mind. We have the same ego and the same right mind, you know, the same loving, all-loving mind that knows all our only need is to find our way home. And that's the part, you know, that innocence for all part of our mind is really the only teacher that we're seeking. And so if we go to the doctor or don't go to the doctor, which teacher do we do it with? Is that the truth about everything that we do in our lives? Which teacher do we do it with? And it usually is a case in practice, if we're talking about living the course, it's recognizing usually first that I've chosen my ego. The teacher I've chosen already is my ego, and I need to choose again because it's hurting me again.
You know? Right.
I forgot my purpose, and I made the ego and the world my purpose again, which means I made guilt real again, and I'm defending myself from something that's unreal. And so, I need to choose again, and I can choose again. The whole point of A Course in Miracles is to strengthen the decision-making mind, the power to make us more and more aware of ourselves as a mind and not a body, and to begin to trust that we have a loving mind within that mind. And it isn't, it isn't just the ego. And the ego actually is the unreal part of our mind. But we have to, we're withdrawing our belief in the ego. But the guilt is being undone through this process of questioning and focusing on my own mind in need of healing. And how do I know my mind's in need of healing again? By my reaction to whatever you seem to be doing.
Or right.
doing, right? I see the problem. And usually the problem comes in the form of another body or another situation or something in the world. And it seems external to me. But all that means is I forgot again. You know, I projected and followed the thought of separation realized and with real consequences, guilty consequences and punishment into the world. And I experienced it as an incoming attack. And so that's my clue. That's, the ego survives in concealment. And my clue that I need to forgive, the course's forgiveness, to question, no, I'm not upset for the reason I think. Maybe I'm wrong about this. The clue that I need to do that is how I feel. That's the darkness you were talking about earlier. This is about looking at the darkness. And you've got to admit what you're feeling first, it isn't trying to cover it over with love and light. That just plunges us more deeply into the dream as spiritual egos. It doesn't undo anything. And it's bound to keep us projecting onto others and only not being aware of it, right?
Right. Well, and, I want to bring up something political, but not because of the politics per se, but just because I think it's a good analogy. I mean, in fact, I was thinking of this because one of the other words that just I'm so focusing on is, what is your purpose? What is your purpose?
Right.
Because ultimately, as you're looking at the darkness, or even like I was trying to figure out a situation the other day, and there seemed to be all these factors. But I kept saying, but what is the real purpose? Keep peeling away the layers and try to figure out what is the real purpose here. What, you're never upset for the reason you think. So what's really going on? What's really the purpose? Because I'm trying to look at that darkness, Susan,
We all are.
But the other thing I had noticed, and like I said, I'm bringing this up not for people to get on one side or the other, but just as a recognition, over the last few days politically, some of the pundits and people on TV, one of the things I'm noticing is how often they're questioning, well, what's the purpose? Because, people are now saying, we want to make this so simple. The president wants a wall. But a number of people have going, he doesn't want a wall. He wants the struggle. He wants to be, the victor and show his base that he is a powerful person. And so they said that's what part of the problem is. Or, as Nancy Pelosi had said, yeah, he keeps moving the goalposts. At first what the Senate passed was okay. And now when the House does the same thing, it doesn't work. And they're saying, we're realizing that maybe we're not tuned into what the purpose is. And so the minute somebody was talking about that, I was really paying attention and realizing that, see, that's true. We want to make something really simple. Oh, somebody wants a wall. But I believe that they're right, that it's not the wall that's really important. He probably doesn't care whether or not there's a wall. He cares about whether or not he has the opportunity. He wants the struggle. He wants to be powerful. And, as an astrologer, I can go, it's a very Aries thing. And I'm not saying he's an Aries, but it's like, we need the struggle. And sometimes that's it. And so even looking at, you know, what was going on in my own life, it's like, okay, do I need the struggle because I need to prove to other people that I am so competent and so wise and that I can overcome anything. So give me a struggle so that I can prove to you I'm smarter than you. You know, what is my purpose? Did I really want peace in this situation? Did I want to show love in this situation? Or did I just want to falsely get somebody's approval that I was so smart and competent that I could solve the problem?
Well, yeah. And you know what? Ultimately, what we really need to look at is that we all want the struggle. What is the ego's purpose? The ego's purpose is to prove I exist, but it's not my fault. And how better to prove that it's not my fault than to have opposition?
Mm-hmm. Right?
So both sides, in the example you're using, I certainly have my position on it in the world, in the 2+2=4 world. And it makes sense logically to me. But both sides want to struggle.
See, right.
Both sides want to struggle. Remember, we're all the same. We're all doing the same thing here. The hierarchy of illusions that we've created is meaningless. And as you were saying, they keep saying, well, what's the purpose? There is no purpose in the world. We're trying to make, it's a meaningless world. Remember what the word was?
Right.
What do we have to do? We grandstand that it has a purpose. We give meaning to it. We give our interpretation to it, and we make it a moral interpretation.
Right. We create a crisis. Just continually.
Emergency. And as if there is anything moral about this world, there isn't. One side is not better than the other side. It's all hogwash.
Right. That's why I say bringing it up. I wasn't trying to take a statement.
That's a very good example. And all of the metaphors and what's going on right now are terrific, too, because it's about walls and fences and, you know, the minutiae of all of these barriers that we create, but we're going to create barriers. It doesn't matter what they look like. We have the barriers are already there. You know, why do we have countries? Why do we have families? Why do we have organizations? Why do we have political parties? It's all the same purpose. Why do we have bodies? You know, that from the Course's perspective, it's all the same.
Right.
But the purpose that we want to give it as Course students is to see, I'm struggling all the time. I'm in conflict all the time. And it's hurting me, and it's meaningless. You know, the only real meaning is learning that I'm innocent, that you're innocent, that we're wrong about this one or the other that's going on. And the only way that I can learn that is by, again, focusing on this is my mind in need of healing here. This is my dream. Everything I see in it, you know, macro and micro, is something I'm choosing to see right now. I'm interpreting it with one teacher or the other.
Right.
And that will determine whether I'm peaceful or not. That's the only thing that determines whether I'm peaceful or not. It's not true that what happens on the news or what happens in my personal life destroys my peace ever. It's because I made a choice to feel unfairly treated again so that I could get rid of the guilt that was already there, that I was already making real. I felt the guilt first and I projected it and it was an unconscious process and I experienced it as a returning attack and I pounced on it.
Right.
That's what we do. And so, you know, we should be, as we practice this, we become more and more used to that process and less judgmental with ourselves, and we're able to say, oh, you know, as Ken would tell us, well, there you go again.
Yeah.
So you have an ego. It's not a big deal. You know, you have the mistake is making it a big deal. And, you know, that was the part of the reflecting the original mistake where we made it a big deal that we had an idea. Well, the idea didn't really go anywhere, but the fact that we believed it did and that it was sinful is what led to this whole process to begin with. So when we catch ourselves looking for the sinful ones, we know which teacher we've chosen.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just an opportunity. We don't have to follow that and we don't have to analyze it. And we don't, because every reaction that we have that is not loving and kind is a choice means we've chosen the ego, and that's all it means.
Right. And we can choose again, which is always the important thing. We can choose again.
And even if we're not ready to choose again, we can know we have the choice and that it's not about what we think it is. And just doing that is opening, you know, you've taken a step back from the ego. You're not fully in it anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, and, you know, a couple of other things, you know, in terms of the wall, the other thing, I mean, once again, it just took me right back to, we've made this world that cracks. You know, they've done this little sample wall, and then they showed that with a very simple tool you could get at the hardware store, you could cut a hole in it. Right. And so, you know, it reminded me, and I've said this on the show, I think several times, years and years ago, I had this dog that obviously I didn't know it when I adopted it, but it had a lot of problems. And so it became obvious to me that I needed to create what I would consider a safe space. And I didn't want to put her in a kennel because I felt like that maybe, I don't know, I just couldn't go there. And eventually that's what I had to do. But I was trying to fence her into my kitchen. And so after, I mean, and she had literally destroyed so much of my house, carpeting, curtains, you know, if I was absent, she freaked out and would just rip everything up. So I went to the hardware store and I bought a fairly expensive gate. And I then took about an hour after work one night when I was tired and hungry and I needed to be doing something else, I installed this gate. And she very patiently sat on the other side of it while, you know, it took me about an hour to get out all the screws and put up this gate and make this very stable barrier between her and me. And I knew, okay, now I can keep her in the kitchen and she'll be safe. As soon as I was finished, Susan, she literally, in one of the most graceful things I've ever seen, just leaped over it. And I cried. I sat down on the floor and cried. And at the point, I didn't know A Course in Miracles. But I think now that I do, I realize, see, once again, I put all my hopes, everything into I can create this physical thing that's going to keep her safe.
Yeah.
You know, that's going to keep my house safe. That's going to do what I want it to do. And she just, like I said, in 1 second, just leaped into the air and leaped right over it. And, you know, that's what I'm talking about. That 2 + 2 = 4. It's cracked. You know, no matter how good our efforts are, we will never create this perfection out of this physical universe that we think we left in the first place.
Very, very true. And while you were talking, what was coming to me is in the second part of the workbook that, you know, is kind of punctuated with those little sections of what is, it clarifies different themes of the course. And there's the section, what is the body?
Uh-huh.
And in that, and it's wonderful, it's actually an incredible section that I would recommend visiting. But it you know, and I'm paraphrasing, but I think it begins, the body is a fence we made to fence out love. And mm-hmm. So, you know, our own bodies are like that. We think, you know, look at how vulnerable they really are, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, we spend all of this energy at trying to make them work and protect them. And they can be like, I think of the old Looney Tune cartoons and Roadrunner and stuff, you know, where they would just be flattened in a moment, right?
Uh-huh.
And that's the truth. I mean, we just, you know, why would we make up the bodies to be so vulnerable? Because, you know, again, this is all about punishment. So no matter what the whole idea of the ego thought system is seek and never find. None of it works, right?
Yes.
But it keeps us seeking and it keeps us hoping. And at some point, we reach a point where we say, there has to be a better way.
Yeah, there just has to be a better way.
There has to be a better way. This is exhausting. And at some point, it does become, I mean, it should become laughable. Because, I mean, it's certainly, I'm not suggesting at all. There's people suffering greatly as a result of what's happening politically in all ways, not just at the border, but, you know, with the shutdown and all over the world, the horrible things that are happening. And the United States is just a tiny piece of that. But, you know, I mean, remember, this is the way that the mind set it up. And so at some point we really have to say this is insane, you know, what we're doing. And what we really want to learn, what every hurting heart wants to learn, is that we're still loved, we're still loving, that we're welcome in heaven, that we're not just these vulnerable bodies, because if that's all there is, we are royally screwed, right?
Right.
The ego's perspective, that's exactly what we are. We're royally screwed by heaven, literally, right?
And, right. And it's not our fault.
We did, but it's not our fault. So have mercy, God, because look how I've tried to make up for it. You know, that's what we're all saying. And for every fragment of the decision-making mind, no matter how odd it may look to another fragment that disagrees with it, every fragment is trying to do the same thing, you know, and within the fragment of its mind, it makes perfect sense and feels completely justified in what it's doing.
Mm-hmm. And once again, it really is a fragment. I love that. I love that word. And I love that idea sometimes of really looking at every single piece of the universe as in the same way that Freud would look at a dream, in that every character is really you. Every piece of it is really you. And, you know, then almost playing a game like, oh, I wonder why I created that. I wonder why I want to look at that. What is that? Once again, what is the purpose of that fragment?
And it's so simple, because you don't have to go very far with that, because the purpose is always the same in the course.
Yeah.
So really, I mean, that's another thing. If we find ourselves really trying to say, what is the purpose? Bingo, I've chosen the ego.
What do you think that purpose is?
Right. The ego survives, you know, loves analysis, right? Analysis is of the ego, the course says. So really, it's so simple from the course's perspective. One problem, one solution. You know, forgiveness is our only function.
Yes.
Our only purpose is to learn true forgiveness.
Yes. And Susan, I'm looking at the clock and I know that we need to kind of wrap up. So I want to, and one thing I didn't even acknowledge, all those people who came into the chat room today, thank you so much to Greg and Quelly and Raven and Kay and Elizabeth and a number of other people. I'm probably missing some people. Liliana, it's good to see you this morning. But anyway, thank you so much for coming over and joining us today. And Susan, thank you very much for being here and for participating in this discussion, as always. And I did already post Susan's forays.com over on Facebook in our private group. But if you ever want to find out, Susan does have a number of interviews, a number of articles, etc. And that is forays, forays. Inforgiveness.com. So you can check her out there. I would also always direct you to www.facim.org, which is the foundation for A Course in Miracles, which is where I found a number of the recordings, a number of the books that I often refer to on this show. And so please go over there and check that out. And I'd also encourage you, remember to join me next week, because we are going to start listening to that workshop that Ken Wapnick did on living A Course in Miracles. So that's going to be a lot of fun. I've really enjoyed it, and I know we're going to enjoy it together. So Susan, do you have any other announcements before we close the show today?
I don't think so at the moment, but it was a pleasure to be here, and I'm really glad that we revisited that topic. It's a good one.
Yes, thank you so much. And by the way, I am going to go to Las Vegas and visit Henderson, where the foundation has moved. And I'm so excited about that.
They have some classes there, so check that out, Sia, and see if you can catch a class.
Yeah, I did check it out. And as of right now, they don't have anything posted for the time that I'm going to be there. But I'm definitely going to go out there. I'm definitely going to go out there and visit. And I think it'll motivate me to go out more, because then when they do have some other classes, I'll go out and visit. So everybody, thank you so much. And also, I want to welcome and thank Brittany, who is our new producer here on Fridays. So thanks, Brittany, for being here. And everybody, thank you for being here. And I hope that you will stay tuned, because we've got a number of other live shows coming up here on Friday. But until next week, relax and wear loose clothes. You have been listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks and my guest, Susan Dugan, on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way you think about mathematics.